Can I start, Dave, just because this is too funny?
Okay, you go ahead.
So here's what you missed behind the scenes. As the guys were leaving from the round table, Dave Bradley's getting ready for his newscast. He has his headphones on, and he's talking with Drew, our technical producer, about the ability, like, they do an audio test to make sure we can play the clips. So Dave has one headphone on. He's talking to Drew, and I lean over to him, and I say, Dave, have you met Kathleen Wynne yet? At the exact same time that Dave says, no thanks, I'm good. Except what he was doing was he was talking to Drew.
So, no need to meet her.
What I thought you said was, did you want something to drink? And I said, no, thanks, I'm good. I thought you were offering waters around.
That's what it was.
So I apologize. Sure. And it's a pleasure meeting you.
It's a pleasure to meet you, Dave.
It is. So we do have a lot of really interesting stories. Friday seemed to be an explosion of news here today. And before we get into details of the Eaton Center shooting sentence or the terror act in London, we have another case of what appears to be a hit and run in Toronto. What is going on with these days? The most recent happened right around 5 o'clock this afternoon in the West End.
We got a call for a hit and run in the middle of the intersection at Rogers Road and Old Weston Road. We had information that a child had been struck. The child is approximately 13 years of age.
Now, the boy's injuries don't appear to be life-threatening. Police are calling them serious at this point. But the dark-colored minivan in this case took off. Once again, talking about yet another hit and run in the city of Toronto. It just seems to be an ongoing theme these days. And good news that the 13-year-old in this one appears as though he's going to live. So there's the upside to this story.
Yeah, these are the stories that were, because we have monitors and we have audio going all of the time. And whenever we hear a story like this, it never ceases to stop the room. And we all go, oh, man, really, this something like this again.
Yeah, and you see it come up on Twitter. I mean, we're in the newsroom. You see it come up and you see child struck. And then you read down a little bit further, vehicle took off.
Yeah.
And it's so you call the police and you're like, really, again? So,
yeah.
I mean, what can you do? I mean, the people have to stand up for what they've done and have to take ownership, unfortunately,
Even
if it's an accident.
It was so interesting. We were just talking about being brave.
Yeah,
right?
That's right.
And looking out for each other. And
part of being brave.
It's hard to imagine hitting a person and leaving.
I agree.
Sometimes, and I've had this discussion with my kids, sometimes the most important form of bravery is personal responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
When you're able to say, you know, I did this. And that's brave because I've had this experience with my kids where I've like, I know you didn't want to admit to that.
Yeah.
I know you didn't want to have to talk about that, but you feel better in the end, regardless of sometimes.
I'm trying to teach that to my 6-year old now of, you know, did you do it? And he's like, I didn't do anything. And it's like, you know,
you're the only one in the room and you're covered in Sharpie.
Exactly. It gets a lot better for you if you just own up to your mistakes.
Yeah.
So I hopefully in this case, the driver notices and does the right thing and turns themselves in.
So here we are 7 years later with this one.
This one's been the ongoing story here in Toronto all the way back in 2012 when Christopher Husbands opened fire in a crowded Eaton Centre food court earlier this year in his second trial, convicted of manslaughter. Today, though, he was sentenced to life in prison. He will be eligible to apply for parole in 16 months with credit for time served. Two people were killed, six others injured in the busy downtown mall. He was originally convicted of second-degree murder, if you remember. That conviction was set aside on appeal. Now, Husbands admitted he was the shooter. There was no question about that, but his lawyers argued he should be found not criminally responsible because he suffered from PTSD due to a stabbing months earlier. One of the people hit in the crossfire was Connor Stevenson, who was just 13 at the time. Does he think justice has been served?
I mean, he's just a horrible person who, like, really doesn't have any place living in Canada. I mean, he doesn't deserve as many chances as he's been given. He was out on bail. He violated every condition of his bail. When he gets out on parole again, he's going to violate all the conditions of his parole again.
So it's obvious it's a big no from him. His mother was also speaking with reporters outside the courthouse today about the PTSD defense. Here's what she had to say.
But I bet you everybody standing in front of me has had something really bad happen to them in their life. Craig and I and this family, not included. You know, we lost our first son. You know, we didn't go Rambo and start shooting people because we had a bad experience in our life. And I bet you could say that for just about everybody. So you know what? That's the way the system works. They allow that. But the truth is, we all make those choices.
Wow.
Yeah, that's powerful stuff from the family. They took questions from a reporter for quite some time. Now, the key here is that Husbands is eligible for parole He's not guaranteed to get it, and Connor says he will be at every one of those hearings when Husbands applies. So I have this right.
Some people might be confused. I'm just a little bit confused. So Connor Stevenson, who was shot in the head, his mom said today that they had also lost Connor's brother.
It appears to be the case. She didn't elaborate on that story, but
how much tragedy can one family have?
Exactly.
And what a brave thing for her to say. You know, I mean. All families deal with stuff.
Yeah.
But we don't go shooting up a food court.
It's true.
And you know what I keep going back to, and you know, I mean, gang justice or whatever you want to call it, or premeditation or however you want to frame it, I keep going back to, if you really had a vendetta against someone, could you not just follow them outside?
Yeah, that's true.
You know?
Why do it right then and there? But he used the defense, and we've heard this now a couple of times. He used that he sort of saw red as soon as he saw his archenemy.
But it wasn't rational.
Exactly. Yeah. He was overcome by that anger.
Then it just happened to have a gun in my waistband.
Exactly. Yeah, that's another thing,
while breaking my bail conditions, but I digress.
Totally. And that's another thing that Connor brought up, is that he broke his bail conditions. He's going to apply for parole, and what makes us think that he can be trusted now? Now, Husband's lawyers say that he is a changed man. He knows better now, and he won't make the same mistakes again.
The parole board will make that decision,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not a guarantee. Like, we have to drive that home. Yes, he's eligible for parole after 16 months. It's not a guarantee he'll get it.
Could you make the argument, do you think, Kathleen, that that Connor, who was 13 when he was shot that day, do you think that was the last day he was a child?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, that's sort of one of the things that was taken from him?
Yeah.
Oh, very much so. Forces you to grow up,
absolutely.
Right? And very composed in speaking to reporters today.
Yeah, he very much was.
Yeah.
I mean, a boy that became this man.
Well, and he actually, he sounds way older than he
yeah.
is.
Yeah, very much so. Because of what he's seen. Okay, let's move over to the UK, where things are even more cheery.
Yeah. Sorry to be the bearer of bad news for a Friday, but this one played out this morning. You heard it live here on News Talk 1010. Three people are dead, including the attacker, in what's being called a terror attack in London. Now, police say the man stabbed several people before being taken down by bystanders on the London Bridge. We have the video of that takedown on our Instagram feed. We'll warn you, it is pretty graphic. That's the sound of police opening fire on the suspect in what is now believed to be, as we mentioned, an act of terror. While cops say they believe it is an act of terror, they still don't know the motive. Why did they open fire? Reports the man opened his coat to reveal what appeared to be an explosive device. They later determined that it was fake.
We are also working at full tilt to understand exactly what has happened and whether anyone else was involved. For this reason, we expect cordons to remain in place around the London Bridge area for some time.
The fact that this was ended by a bunch of what appeared to be regular people isn't lost on the Prime Minister, Boris Johnson.
I also want to pay tribute to the extraordinary bravery of those members of the public who physically intervened to protect the lives of others. And for me, they represent the very best of our country, and I thank them.
Still no group has claimed responsibility. We checked in with Toronto Police, as we generally do when following up on events like these, to see if there will be increased security at things like the Christmas market, for example. They say they'll continue to monitor security issues, not just within the city of Toronto, but around the world. They'll make appropriate adjustments in order to mitigate any potential risks to public safety. So nothing yet, but they're keeping an eye on things. As a politician, though, I got to ask, when you're faced with a situation like this, obviously not of this magnitude, how quickly do the wheels start to be set in motion? How quickly can you react?
Well, I think about the van attack. So that was in the last few weeks of my my time as premier, and immediately. I mean, immediately, you start asking questions, you get briefed, you want to know what's happening, and you want to know, you want to understand what's being done without getting in the way of the professionals. And then there's always the question of whether you go or not, you know, do you show up? Which is that's a minor question, but I would say, Dave, right off the top, it becomes the thing that consumes you, and you want to make sure that you are not missing anything in terms of what could be done to help.
So you're just mobilizing all the characters and getting them all together, just essentially all hands on deck.
Yeah,
correct?
I mean, usually what happens, and it happened in that situation, my staff would find out before me because I'd be involved in something, and then we would all know, and then we would basically clear the decks for whatever, you know, of whatever was on the agenda, and then come together and figure out, okay, now what do we do to respond to this? Is it necessary for us to respond? Yeah. Is it up to, you know, do the police want, need, you know, is it appropriate? All those questions.
Interesting.
I would like to know, when you were premier, were there moments where you would be advised of a plan or a contingency when it came to an event or just something that was happening in our province where you would think to yourself, I didn't even know this department existed. I didn't even know this contingency existed, but I'm glad it's here. Obviously, I don't expect you to give up security.
Sure.
But were there moments where you were just eye-opening for you?
Oh, for sure. Especially in terms of the Ontario police working with other jurisdictions, you know, I didn't have a lot of knowledge of that. And so, again, if we think about the van attack, I would then be briefed on what the conversation was with the federal government, what the conversation was with the other police organizations. So for sure, there's all sorts of stuff that goes on in government, and it's really hard to know about every corner and every committee that's operating at a particular moment.
Do you come away from those conversations thankful that we have such great people in
Absolutely.
Place in these jobs?
Absolutely. I mean, it's one of the things that gets lost in conversations about politics. There are the elected politicians, and they are very important. Of course, they are decision makers. But underpinning the elected politicians is this huge bureaucracy, and I know that can be heard as a bad thing, but they're very smart people and they're very methodical. You know, they absolutely follow the process so that details are not missed. And thank goodness for that, because honestly, politicians can be distracted by bright, shiny objects, you know, if I may say. So it's really, really important that those people are there saying, okay, Minister, okay, Premier, here are the options. Here's what's happening. You know, the ice storm when I had just been, it was 2013, and I had just become the Premier. And, you know, it was very, very important that I was briefed every morning. We were working with the city. We were working with Hydro One and with the Toronto Hydro. And it was critical that those experts kept me informed the whole time.
Yeah. Because then people like us could come calling and ask the questions.
Well, yeah.
What do you know? And when are we going to get our power back on?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So when we come back, still to come, we're going to talk about the wallop that's going to be the weather that we have coming up this weekend. We'll have that and a lot more. We're going to touch on the Calgary Flames story, which myself and Kathleen had very interesting opinions about. And if I do say so myself, I know that sounded braggadocious. We both had strong opinions. That's way better. God, it's not Ryan sitting here. Maybe it's coming. It's just from the chair. It just reeks of ego. It is 6:15. Welcome back. Jay Michaels, Kathleen Wynn in for Ryan Doyle this week. Dave Bradley is here. It is the Friday Views on the News.
And we have an update as far as news goes. This is the weather. If you're planning on outdoor chores this weekend, your best bet is Saturday. Sunday, the big chore will be this. Shoveling the driveway. Environment Canada with a special weather statement for Toronto and surrounding areas. They say we could see some ice pellets or freezing rain for a few hours on Sunday morning before it changes to snow in the afternoon. But by the time it wraps up, we could be left with up to 10 centimeters. We say up to because they aren't exactly sure yet how this one is going to play out. A little change in the temperature could mean a big difference to how much we actually get on the ground. But one guarantee is that it is going to be messy on Sunday. And if we do get all 10 centimeters of snow over the day on Sunday, Monday morning drive will likely be slower as well. So keep that in mind when you're setting your alarm.
Now, it's funny because I'm super excited because after the show, I'm driving to Prince Edward County. And Prince Edward County is going to be beautiful with the snow on Sunday.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking I'm going to wake up on Sunday and I'll be standing there with a coffee looking at this beautiful view thinking, how long can I possibly stand here before I have to jump in my car and blast back to Toronto as fast as I can before I'm stranded?
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm going to be on that... That sort of watch
and
wait.
You can stay
thing.
A little bit longer,
that's
and then the roads will be plowed.
Well, that's what I'm hoping for. I'm thinking the 401's probably going to be fine.
Just come back overnight Sunday. Into Monday?
Look at that.
There you go. See, so it'll be done. It'll taper off in time for... Yeah.
Look at the big brain on Brad. All right, let's move on to... what's next?
Well, it's another kind of a downer story, but it's an update to another hit and run. We talked off the top about a hit and run just this afternoon. This is an update to one that happened at the beginning of the month last month. Police still looking for the alleged driver, but they have one of two men now in custody wanted in a serious hit and run that happened in Scarborough last month. Back on October 13th near a pharmacy in Ellesmere, that's when the Dodge Journey jumped the curb and hit two women who were pushing a stroller and a nearly two-year-old child inside that stroller. The mother and grandmother of the child both seriously injured. The child was as well. Police believe the 40-year-old Jeremiah Cook was the passenger in that vehicle. He's the one in custody now, but he was also believed to be responsible for dumping the SUV. He faces a list of charges, including breach of probation. Police are still looking for 34-year-old Derek D'Souza. He's the man believed to have been behind the wheel. He's wanted on a Canada-wide warrant. Now, an update from police this afternoon. They aren't quite sure how the current condition of the victims are, but we do know that in the days afterward that both women were upgraded to stable condition in hospital shortly after arriving there. But the infant suffered critical injuries in that incident. So at least they have one of two people in custody. If you know where Derek D'Souza is, we have his picture up on our website, and just let police know. They're desperately looking for him.
Something you don't hear often on News Talk 1010. Hey, how about those Calgary Flames?
Yeah, exactly. Why are we talking about the Calgary Flames today? Well, they parted ways with their head coach, but Bill Peters wasn't fired. He resigned. Peters was at the center of an alleged racism scandal. It's pretty much dogged him all week after a black player came forward claiming Peters used a racist slur while both were in the minor leagues 10 years ago. The Flames say the case is now closed on their end. But TSN's hockey insider Bob McKenzie, speaking with TSN 1050 earlier today, says there still could be more here.
No matter what his employment status or lack thereof is with the Calgary Flames, there may be some discipline-related things coming too from the NHL. We don't know that, but that's within the realm of possibility.
Also, the general manager for the Flames refused to discuss whether or not Peters would still continue to be paid. It's unclear with those contracts what's going to happen.
So I thought when you said that Bob McKenzie was going to say there could be more, I thought the clip was going to be that there could be others.
Oh.
Because there's not just one guy.
It's true.
There's
it's
not just one guy who does this stuff.
That's true. Well, in addition to the alleged racist remarks that he made, another player did come forward from the time that Peters was coaching in Carolina, claiming there's some abuse on the bench, that he was allegedly punched while sitting on the bench by Peters. I don't know. Maybe it was a way to motivate the players or whatever. But yeah, you're right. There's always more sort of hiding in the background and waiting for somebody to break the ice, and eventually more allegations come forward.
I thought it was really interesting, the comments from PK Subban.
I'll tell you this, whatever I've gone through was nothing compared to what Willie O'Ree or Herb Carnegie or Mike Marson or any other black hockey players, Grant Fuhr, Mike Greer. What I've gone through is probably nothing compared to what they've gone through. So, for me, a lot of times when those things happen, it's the people that say those things that have the issue, not me. So,
I think we're starting to see it now with this case today, with Don Cherry. I think you're starting to see that changing of the guard with the new Leafs coach that we have in place. I think you're really starting to see that generational transition.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that kind of culture is going to be allowed anymore. I don't think you're going to be allowed to walk into a dressing room and break sticks and throw stuff and break things and scream in people's faces. And, you're going to motivate in different ways.
Yeah, let's hope not. And, what PK's saying is that there's been progress. And for sure there has.
Yeah.
But I think... what the Peters thing shows is that we're not there yet.
No, not quite there yet. But as you mentioned, too, with new coaches, new faces and younger feelings, hopefully their upbringing is going to bring a new sort of motivation into the league and a new way of doing things. So it remains to be seen, right?
I was really hoping we could finish up the week with a good old handrail story.
Oh, did you want one?
You got one?
Because I have one.
All right.
It's amazing that this one made it all the way to the Supreme Court, but here we are. So the High Court says a police overstepped the line when they fined a Quebec woman for refusing to hold on to an escalator handrail. The woman was in a subway station back in 2009 when a police officer said, "Respect the pictogram," with the instruction, "Hold the handrail." The woman replied, like many of us would, looked at the cop and went, "No." And she said, "I don't consider the image," which also featured the word "careful," to be an obligation. So she declined to hold the handrail. Eventually, after she was detained for about 30 minutes, she was let go with a couple tickets and hefty fines. She fought them in court, was acquitted, obviously. then filed a lawsuit. The Supreme Court sided with her, says she's now entitled to $20,000.
Do you go back to that same escalator and just ride it up and down doing the queen wave? With your hands in the air.
$20,000, bitches! $20,000!
Like it's a roller coaster.
Some Black Friday shopping for that person for sure. Dave Brawley, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate it.
Have a great weekend.
Nice to meet you, Dave.
Nice to meet you, too.
No, thanks. I'm good. Lots to come when the rush continues, including a double up with your smart speaker. We give those away at 6:45.